Okay, so we are holding on Lamed Ches Amud Bey's second line from the bottom. We were learning yesterday various statements, the whole section of Agadta, about Tzaddikim and Rishoyim. So continuing on that topic, the last thing we said was that when a person withstood an Avera a couple of times, then already Hashem helps him that he's not going to do that Avera that soon. Raglei Chassidav Yishmor, Hashem watches the feet of his Chassidim, where Raglei means, Rashi says it means the number of times that he did it, like his son is Yesholosh Regalim. Marsha says also the word Raglei means Regilus. Once he's used to not doing it, then Hashem gives him an extra boost to not do it in the future. So talking further on that topic about a person being more or less susceptible to doing an Avera. Omer Shlokish, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Mishlei, im la leitzim hu yalitz, if a person wants to be together with leitzim, which are scoffers, which are people who make fun of anything of Kedusha and then belittle it, hu yalitz, then Hashem will make it possible for him to become a letz. But to people who want to be humble, if a person wants to be close to the people who are humble and careful about mitzvahs, Yitin Chen, Hashem will give him grace. Yitin, he will give, means Hashem, who's the one who's capable of giving that. So what does that mean? That means Balatame, it means if a person wants to become Tameh, then Hashem will open up the door. Hashem is not going to help him do it, but Hashem is not going to help him and not going to prevent him. The door will be open, and it's his choice whether to go through it. So therefore, hu yalitz, he will become a letz. The implication is he by himself. He wants to be, then he's going to be able to become volatile. But if he wants to become tahor, misayinoisa, then Hashem helps him, that the yitain chayim, that Hashem gives him grace and gives him a help against his yitzahara. This is like a person who was selling neft, which is, in English it's called naphtha. It's like a kerosene, a very foul smelling liquid, and a farsimon, which is balsam, which is a very good smelling liquid. So bol limded neft. So now if a customer comes and wants to buy neft and measure some out for himself, then the seller tells him, you measure it out for yourself. I don't want to get involved because I don't want the smell to stick to me. Bol limded a farsimon, on the other hand, if he wants to buy a farsimon, omeloy, then the seller tells him, Hamtin liad she'emdet imcha, wait for me, let me measure it with you, kadeshin isbasam anivata, this way you and I will both be perfume. So in the same way, so to speak, if a person wants to be involved with neft, if a person wants to be involved with rishus, then Hashem says, go ahead on your own. I'm not going to help you, but I'm not going to stop you. But if a person wants to become a tzaddik, then Hashem, so to speak, helps him out, like the seller of a farsimon helps out, helps the customer measure it up. More on this topic, Tanad Veda Bishmal, Aveda Metamtemis Libe Shel Adam. An Aveda stops up a person's heart. So Rashi says it stops it up, that now he's not able to absorb any kind of Chochmah. In various places also we say it means that he's not able to absorb Kedusha. The Frat, it says that about Ma'acholos Asuras, if a person eats foods that are also, then that has an effect on their, then that metamtem alev v'amoyach is a famous expression that stops up the person's heart and the person's brain, that now they're more insensitive to Kedusha. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says about the Torah tells us don't eat shrotzim and various other things like that, v'loy sitamu behem, you should not become tomei with them, v'nit mesem bom, now the literal meaning v'nit mesem means you will become tomei with them, but the word is written in the Torah missing the aleph of tomei. Therefore, al tukrivinit nesem el vinitamtim. Therefore, we can read the word not vinitnesem with a suf, but rather vinitmetem or vinitamtem, that you will become insensitive. You will become stopped up. We're changing the tough into a test, in other words. So Tanarabanan, we learn in a braisa in this connection, when the pasuk says al titamubahem or veloy sitamubahem, vinitmesembam, why the double expression, you shouldn't become tame with them because then you will become tame with them. And what does that mean? It means odem matame atzme ma'at, if a person makes himself a little bit tame, matamen ose habi milamata, then Hashem will make it possible for him to become very much more tame down below over here. So in other words, veloy sitamubahem, don't you make the choice to eat these shrotzim and make yourselves tame, because then you'll have the ability now, Hashem will make it, will open up the door for you to become much more tame than it's mason bum, and you'll become tame through them. Similarly, milamata, if a person becomes tame down here, if he makes himself a little tame, then in Shemayim they'll make him much more tame. Milamata matamanos milamayla, and if he makes himself tame down here on earth, then Hashem will make it possible for him to become more tame lamayla. Hashem will bring down like more tuma on him, more capability for tuma, that is. And ba'olamazem, the time of Nosi, Olam Haba, if a person makes himself tame in this world, then he'll be made tame in Olam Haba. So one thing leads to another. On the other hand, Tana Rabbanan, we know, of course, Midah Tova Merubah, that Hashem's Midah of goodness is always more than the Midah of punishment. So therefore, the flip side is also true. The Pasuk says in those Pesukim, Veskadishtim Veyisim Kedoshim, you should make yourselves holy, and I will, and you will be holy. This is the next Pasuk. So it's the other way around. Adam Mekadosh Atzmei Ma'at, if a person makes himself a little bit holy, Mekadosh Anosei Harbe, then Hashem makes it possible for him to become much more Kaddish. Again, Abolitar Messiah Anosei, Hashem will help him out. Therefore, he now has much more capability of becoming holy. The Rebbe used to quote this all the time. It mentions it in Tanya, actually, in a couple of places. In Perek Chof Zayin, it mentions it that, for example, you have a person does a little bit of a scapia, a person works a little bit on controlling and subjugating his Yetzihara, then Hashem gives him much more capability to do that. At the end of the Geras HaTshuva also, the Alter Rebbe mentions it, and he brings in that connection, which the Rebbe used to bring a number of times, a marshal that when we see the sun moving a little bit from our vantage point, really it's moved thousands of miles. So the same way a tiny little movement here on earth creates a huge movement in Shemayim. And of course there's the idea also that a person can only accomplish ma'at down here. A person can only accomplish a little bit, because after all, a person is a baal gvul. But Hashem, who is built the baal gvul, then reciprocates with much more ability to become kadosh. Similarly, milamata makadshados milamayla. If a person works down here on becoming kadosh, then Hashem will make it more possible for him to become kadosh higher up milamayla. And ba'olam hazeh makadshados ba'olam haba. If a person makes himself kadosh in this world, then Hashem will give him the capability of becoming kadosh in the next world as well. So every little bit that we do, Hashem reciprocates more. Hadron alach omer lahem amamona. So now we're getting back to the next parak. We're getting back on topic of Yom Kippur. We digress because we had two Mishnayos ago. We had where it said that the Kohen Gadol is going to be doing a lottery. Shlomo Kuritz eventually comes and he likes to put his stuff over here. So sit over here maybe. No, but he comes in the middle and starts setting up for Shacharis. So. So now we're getting back. So we talked two Mishnayos ago how the Kohen Gadol is going to go and do a girdle on the two goats, Lashem and Lazazel. So we said that originally the lots were made out of wood, and then one of the Kohenim, Ben Gamla, made them instead out of gold, and the Chachamim praised him for that, and then we digress to talk about various other people who donated things for the Beis Hamikdash. And then we also digress to talk further about various people who did not give away the secrets that they had about how to make Torahs and Malachim Aponim and so forth, and the Chachamim criticized them for that. So now we're getting back to the topic of continuing with the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. So the Mishnah says, Taraf b'kalpi, he would grab quickly out of the kalpi. He has to, because otherwise you have the words Lashem and Lazazel are engraved on the lots. You don't want him to be able to feel around in there and be able to feel which one says Lashem. And we're going to say in the Gemara, it was a good siman if the one for Lashem came up in his right hand. So he might be feeling around in there, and of course that wouldn't be a girdle at all. Rabbeinu Hananel adds also the word Taraf also means to mix them up. So he would shake them up, and then he would grab in there quickly and then grab out the gerolas, the halashne gerolas, and he takes out the two gerolas. Echad Kosev Olav Lashem, the Echad Kosev Olav Lazazel, one is Mocht Hashem, with Hashem's name, and the other one is Mocht Lazazel. Haskan B'Yemina Yerosh Beis Av Mismoile. Now, you have, we said before, a few Mishnayos ago, that when he comes to this area of the Azara to do the girdle, then he has the Sgan and the Rosh Beis Av walking with him, so they're standing next to him. The Sgan, the deputy Kohen Gadol, standing to his right, and the Rosh Beis Av, the head of that day's Beis Av, is standing by his left. So now, Im Shal Shem Ola B'Yemina, if the one with Hashem's name comes up in the Kohen Gadol's right hand, Asgan, then the Sgan who's standing on that side, Omalo, he tells him, Ishi Kohen Gadol, my master, the Kohen Gadol, Had B'Yemincha, lift up your right hand so everybody can see the Gadol Lashem in it. The Im Shal Shem Ola B'Smoilo, and if the one with Hashem's name came out in the Kohen Gadol's left hand, then the Rosh Beis Av, Omalo, and the Rosh Beis Av, who's standing on that side, Omalo, he tells him, Ishi Kohen Gadol Had B'Smocha, lift up your left hand. Either way, you want to lift up so everybody can see that this is the Gadol Hashem. Okay? Nosnan al Shnei Se'irim, he puts the two Gadolos on the two goats, V'Omer L'Hashem Chatas, and when he's putting the one L'Hashem on the one goat, he says the words L'Hashem Chatas. Rabbi Shmuel, Amir Rabbi Shmuel says, he didn't have to say both words. He doesn't actually have to say the word chatas, he just has to say the word lashem. Because, in other words, Tosfos Yeshanim explains, now the expression in the pasuk is not lashem chatas. The expression is that he should take the girdle, asher ola olam, a girdle lashem, va'asahu chatas. He should make it a chatas. So Rabbi Shmuel understands, he doesn't actually say the word chatas, he just has to say the word lashem, and then later on he will make it, he will do it as a korban chatas. So he doesn't have to say the word chatas. The Rambam Paskins like the Tanakhama, which is why we have in the Seder Avodah of Yom Kippur that we say that the Kohen Gadol said Lashem Chatas.
It makes sense that Lashem nothing
to Avodah. No, but in other words, the point to Rabbi Shmuel, he just has to say the word Lashem, whereas according to the Tanakhama, he has to say the words Lashem Chatas, both, right? Okay. Vehena Onin Achrav, either way, when he says Lashem, then they answer after him, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Olam Vod, as we said in the previous parak, that whenever the Kohen Gadol says Hashem's name, then everybody would say that. In the Machsa, we have the line over there also, Vakonim Va'om Oim Demazorah, that they would all bow. However, we said we have a note in the Machsa that the Alter Rebbe put over there, V'kan Ein Tzorich L'Chroya, here you don't have to bow, and the Shara Kol explains, Alpi Kabbalah, that you're only supposed to be bowing three times, or four times actually, because of one time in Aleinu as well, and this isn't one of them, and not necessarily did they bow anyway. Maybe Al Pi Kabbalah, maybe you only need to bow when he says Lifnei Hashem Titoru, which is not the case over here. So that's what I'm saying. What we do is like this. We have the Kohen Gadol's first vidui on the pyre for himself and his family. So then we say Vakoyanim and we bow, because he finishes off of the Lifnei Hashem Titoru. The second one also is for himself and all the Kohenim, also on the same pyre. Then you have in between, at this point, you have the girdle. So we're saying, he says the girdle, he says Lashem Chatas, we save our Kohenim, we don't bow. So the Shara Kohen explains, because Alpi Kabbalah, there's only a certain number of times that we're supposed to be bowing on Yom Kippur, and only the times when the Kohen Gadol says, Lefnei Hashem Titoru, and this isn't one of them. He's not saying Titoru over here, he's not saying the Pasuk Kivayim Azeh. So therefore we don't. And then later on, you have two more bowings when he again says the vidui on the pyre the second time for himself and the Kohenim, and later on when he says the vidui on the Sar La'Zazel for the whole Jewish people.
The one he doesn't say
that. The one he doesn't say that. The Nashim Taru is the one that we don't bow at.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Gemara says, Lomali Torah Bakalbi. Why do you need to mix up the Gadolos and grab them quickly out of the box? So the reason is, because we don't want him to notice which one is the one Lashem and take Gavka that one. Tosfos Yeshanim says, come on, he knows he has a mitzvah to do a girdle, and obviously if he takes out one deliberately, then it's not a girdle at all. But on the other hand, the fact is, he really wants the one Lashem should come out in his right hand, because it'll be a good simon for the Yidin, so therefore he may bechlal forget, Tosfos Yeshanim says, he may be torud, he may be like distracted, and forget that he even needs to make a girdle, and just think that he can reach in and find the one Lashem and take it in his right hand. So therefore we want him to davka, put his hands in quickly, and shake them up, and then take them out. Okay.
This one, everything was in the right box. One box.
There's only one box. Yeah, we said there's only one box. No, no, no. We said the other day, we discussed in the Gemara, the question doesn't mean, when it says Gerol Lois, doesn't mean that there were two Gerolos LaShem and two Gerolos LaZazel, or maybe it doesn't mean that you have to put both Gerolos on each animal. And we said no, since it says Gerol Achav Hashem, Gerol Achav LaZazel, so it means there's only one Gerol for Hashem and only one Gerol for LaZazel. So Omar Rava, so Rava says in this connection, Kalpi shel Eitz Hoya, the box that the Gerolos were in was made out of wood, v'shel Chol Hoysa, it was of Chol, meaning it was not made, it was not bought with money from the Trumas Alishka, and it was not a Kli Shoris, the Eina Machzekes al Shtei Yadayim, and it only was large enough to hold the Kohen Gadol two hands.
Who paid for it?
So somebody donated it to the Beis Hamikdash. So Maskis Ravina, so Ravina asks, why? I understand why it has to be only big enough to hold his two hands, plus the gerolas, of course. Again, we don't want him to feel around in there and dafka take the one girdle in his right hand. But why is it shochoil? Nikancha. Why don't we make it kodesh? Why don't we buy it from funds of hekdesh? The reason is, imkain havale klei shoris shel eitz. Because then it would amount to a kli shoris made out of wood. Meaning, now Tosfos Yeshayahu says it wouldn't really be a kli shoris. Later on in the Gemara, we're going to discuss whether the girdle is even considered an avoida or not. We're going to have at the bottom of one of the tests on the days whether the girdle is even considered an avoida. Even if it is, the girdles themselves might be considered a kli shoris. The box that they're in is not really considered a kli shoris. So therefore, so it wouldn't really be so what it means is, though, if people see that it's bought from Trumas Halishka, people are going to think that clay shoris can be made out of wood. Therefore, in the future, they're going to donate wooden kalim to the Beis Hamikdash, thinking that they can be used for clay shoris. Now, there is a machlokas about it in a few places in Shas. You have an opinion of Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda, who says that you could make clay shoris out of wood. However, the halacha is not like him. The halacha is like a chamim. That clay shardis can be made only out of metal. So therefore, we don't want people to make that mistake, and therefore, we wouldn't buy this kalpi, we wouldn't buy this box out of hekdesh funds. And actually, Tosfos Yeshayahu says, listen, even according to Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda, he says clay shardis could be made out of wood, but he agrees, mitzvah min amuvcher, that it should be made out of metal. So therefore, we don't want this one. So that it has to be out. It's going to be out of wood for the reason that we're going to say in a second. But we don't want it. Therefore, that it's going to be bought with hektish funds. Okay. So the question is, v'nevda dekesef, v'nevda dezav, nu, why not taka make it out of silver or gold? The reason is, Torah chos al mamon and shal Yisrael, because the Torah has rachmanas on Jewish money. We don't want to waste Jewish money unnecessarily. Rashi says we learn. Rinashi says, we learn it famously from the case of a person whose house has taras, where we tell him to clear out his house before the kohen comes, so that everything doesn't become tameh. And we say that it's all, after all, only the clay cheres, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, it's only the clay cheres that are in the house that are going to be a problem. And the Torah has rachmanos even on those. So therefore, we don't want to waste money unnecessarily, so therefore, we don't want to make it out of silver or gold, when just as well we could make it out of wood. Given that it's not a clay cheres, and it doesn't have to be made out of metal, then we don't dafka insist that it should be. There is, in fact, actually, there's an interesting point. A Talmud of the Noda Yehuda named the Tshuva Me'ava, that was the name of his own sefer. He himself was the Rav of Prague later on after the Noda Yehuda. He one time wrote to the Noda Yehuda a question. He says, "How we have over here, Torah Chos Amamon and Yisrael. On the other hand, we have another rule, Ein Anius B'Mokam Ashirus. In the place of riches, the Beis Hamikdash, we don't try to save money. Liyah Kesef Liyah Zav. After all, Hashem says, all the silver and gold and all in the whole world is mine. And therefore, we do everything in the Beis Hamikdash by Chava. So when do we apply one rule? When do we apply the other? So that the Noda Yehuda says, the answer is, when we're talking about something which is itself a kli shoris, then yes, we don't save on money. Then we make it as bahachava, we make it as generously as possible. But what here, when you have, it's not really an avoda, and the thing is not a kli shoris, and it doesn't have any intrinsic kedusha of its own, that's when we say, atzora chos al mamon and shal Yisrael.
But if you wouldn't have the gadol, it wouldn't be ma'akav.
So actually, the ritzva, no, so it's not, the gadol itself is ma'akav, we're going to talk about later. But the ritzva explains, at least on a daraisa level, you don't necessarily need the gadolas to be in a box at all. You could just have them laying face down on the table, and he could mix them around and then pick one and pick the other. So the whole concept that we need a box is only like a Hebrew mitzvah, so therefore we don't dafka need to make it out of silver or gold. Okay. So the Gemara says, Masnissim deloiki haitana. Now, our Mishnah does not, which says that the Kohen Gadol would take the two garolas in his two hands, is not like the following Tana. The Tanya, we learn in a Braise, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, it wasn't the Kohen Gadol reaching his two hands in and pulling out the garolas, rather, Hasgan, the Kohen Gadol, Machnissin Yodan Bakalpi. The Sgan and the Kohen Gadol, each of them stick their right hand into the Kalpi. So each one is taking out one girdle. With the right hand. If the one Hashem comes up in the Kohen Gadol's right hand, then the Sgan tells him, my master Kohen Gadol, lift up your right hand. And if instead the one Hashem came out in the Sgan's right hand, then Rosh Beis Av Omele the Kohen Gadol Dabra Miloch. Then the Rosh Beis Av says that he doesn't tell the Kohen Gadol to lift up his hand, because there's no reason to, but he tells him instead, speak your words. Why doesn't he have to tell the Sgan, lift up your right hand? Tosfos Hashanim says, first of all, the Kohen Gadol is very, his mind is very occupied. He knows he has the whole Avodah to do that day. The Sgan, not really. So therefore, he's not going to be so distracted and occupied, and therefore he'll know to raise his hand on his own. On the other hand, the Kohen Gadol may need to be reminded. And also, we don't want him to lift up his right hand because that would embarrass the Kohen Gadol. Look at this. He's lifting up his right hand with the girdle in it, and the Kohen Gadol is not. So therefore, the Rosh Beis Av would just tell, so therefore, nobody's lifting up their hand in that case, but the Rosh Beis Av tells the Kohen Gadol, Dabra Miloch, speak your words. You have to say, Lashem Chapa. In other words, I guess the Sgan would put the girdle on the one Hashem himself, or he would hand it to the Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol would put it on the goat. Either way, the Kohen Gadol is the one who has to say, Hashem Chatos. He wouldn't raise his hand then in that case, because he's holding the one Lazozel. Yeah. So the question is, the name of a Sgan, why do we have the Rosh Beis Av tell him to say, Hashem Chatos? Why don't we have the Sgan tell him? The reason is kiven dole solik biyode, because since the one Lashem didn't come up in the Kohen Gadol's hand, chol shadayte, then if the Sgan tells him to say it, then he's going to feel bad. He's going to feel like he's lording it over me. Like not only he's the one who got it in his right hand, but now he's shteching me right by saying speak your word. So therefore we leave it for the Rosh Beis Av. Okay, so the Gemara says, "B'mai kamitvigi." So, what's the underlying machloitus between the Tana of our Mishnah and Rabbi Yehuda? So we have like this. In other words, you think of it: if the Kohen Gadol is going to do the girdle all by himself, it means one girdle is coming up in his right hand and one is coming up in his left hand. Generally speaking, avodah has to be done with the right hand. So that might be a reason to say maybe the Sgan should be doing it as well. Each of them will stick their right hand in. That way it's being done with the right hand. On the other hand, we know that all the Avodah of Yom Kippur is supposed to be done by the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, maybe that's a reason that the Kohen Gadol should do it. So that's the machlokes. Mar Sava Yemina de Sgan Oder from Smolei de Kohen Gadol. One Tana holds, the Tana of Rabbi Yehuda holds, that the right hand of the Sgan is more important than the left hand of the Kohen Gadol. Then the left hand of the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, given a choice, let's have the Sgan pick it up in his right hand. That way, at least it's being done with the right hand. Now the fact is, we're saying that avodah has to be done by the Kohen Gadol. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda is going to take the view, like we said before, the girdle is not really so much of an avodah that it has to be done exclusively by the Kohen Gadol. But on the other hand, we know that everywhere in the Beis Mikdash, the right hand is always given preference, and therefore we say we would rather have the right hand be used. Well, Mar Sava, where's the Tana of our Mishnah holds, Ki Hadodi Ninu, they're on an equal level. So therefore, there's no reason to have the Sgan do it. We might as well have the Kohen Gadol himself do it with his left hand. Okay. So the question now is, Uman Hai Tana de Poligale de Rebihoda. Now, we have the Tana Kama of our Mishnah. Who is that Tana who disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda? So usually we would say Rabbi Meir, but here the Gemara is going to find that it's actually a different Tana that we find that speaks about this. Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohenim. That is Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohenim. The Tanya, Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohenim. Lama Sgan Miyaminoi. Why does the Sgan walk around at the right side of the Kohen Gadol? Why is he always walking on the right side? We said the other day, not literally on the right side, because if he walks by his right side, then we say he's a boor. We mean he walks sort of behind him. But behind and to the side. But why? Rashi brings another girsa over here. the word does not mean minoy, but rather memuna. The word is, why is the scan appointed in the first place? What's the purpose of having a scan? The reason is, shem irabay psul b'kohen gadol, if a kohen gadol becomes possible, nichnas scan or mashamash tachtav, then the scan will come and serve instead of him, but as long as that doesn't happen, the scan is not doing any avoda. Therefore, Rav Chanina Sgan HaKohenim is going to be the Tana of our Mishnah, who says, therefore, that the Sgan is not lifting out one of the Gerolas. Otherwise, you would say that's why the Sgan was appointed, in order to take out one of the Gerolas. Now, we're saying instead that, no, his job is just to be there to take over in case the Kohen Gadol becomes Tomei. They say a vote, by the way, about Rav Chanina Sgan HaKohenim. Why is he called Sgan HaKohenim in the plural? Because we know in his time, he lived towards the end of the second Mishnah. He was one of the Tanoim who lived through the Churban. So in his times, we know the Kohenim Gedolim, as we learned in the first Perek of our Masechta, many of them didn't live out the year, because they would go into the Kodesh Kedoshim, and they'd die in Yom Kippur, and they'd bought their position with money. So therefore, but he being a tzaddik, he lasted a long time, so he was a scan to many different Kohanim. So therefore we call him Rav Chanina Sgan HaKohenim, because he was a Sgan, he was a deputy to many different Kohenim Gerven. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Avoyim Shona Sheshimish Shimon HaTzadik. Throughout the 40 years that Shimon HaTzadik served as Kohen Gadol, Hoya Gerol Ola B'Yamin. The Gerol Hashem would always come up in his right hand, which is a good simon. Mikan ve'elach, after Shimon HaTzadik passed away, pa'omim ola b'yamin, pa'omim ola b'smel, sometimes it would come up in the right hand, sometimes in the left hand. And v'hoyal, another thing that happened during Shimon HaTzadik's times, v'hoyal loshen shol zahodes malbin, the red strip of wool, which we're going to say later on, they would tie onto the sor ha'mishaleach, to the sor la'azazel, that would turn white. Actually, we're going to say later on, there were a few different strips of wool. There was one that they originally put it by the door of the Heichel, but then people were getting disappointed that it wasn't changed, so they sent it off with the Sur HaMishtaleach, and he put half of it on the head of the animal and half he tied to a rock. We're going to get to that later on in the sixth Perek when we talk about the Sur LaZozel. So originally it would turn white, the Kanveilach, Palm and Malbin. After that, sometimes it would turn white, sometimes not. It was meant as a simon that Hashem forgave the avedus of the Jewish people. Al derech like the pasuk im yiu chateichem kashanim kashalag yalbinu. Even if your avedus are red and disgusting like scarlet, then they'll become white as snow. So in Shimon HaTzadik's times, Hashem showed that, but after that, not necessarily. V'hoya ner ma'arovi doylek. Also during Shimon HaTzadik's times, the ner ma'arovi of the menorah would always stay burning longer than the other ones. Every lamp of the menorah had the same amount of oil in it, but a nest would happen to show that the Shechinah is resting by the Jewish people, and the ner ma'arovi would last longer than the other ones. Rashi over here says that in the morning the Kohen Gadol would put it out and clean it out and put in a new oil and wick. Elsewhere Rashi says that no, it would actually burn throughout the whole day and he would clean it out and prepare it only in the evening. And the Ritva understands Rashi over here to be saying the same thing as he says over there. So it would burn through the whole day, even though all the other lamps would be out by the time the Kohen walks in there in the morning.
In other words, they
had to clean it out and put in a new wick and oil at some point. But Rashi over here, on the face of it, Rashi over here is saying that in the morning when they do that, Atavas Neiris, so we learned previously, they have Atavas Chomesh Neiris and Atavas Shtei Neiris. So when it comes to the Shtei Neiris, so Rashi over here seems to be saying that when it came to the last Shtei Neiris, and one of them is the Ner Ma'arovi, at that point he would put that one out, clean it out, put in a new oil and wick, and then in the evening they're going to light that one again. So the nest would be, in other words, that it was still burning in the morning when he came in there, rather than the other ones have long since gone out. And then it's Shabbos, Rashi says differently, and again, the Ritva says that that's what Rashi means over here also, that no, he actually would leave that one alone in the morning and not do anything with it until the evening, and then in the evening he would put it before he's going to light the menorah for the night, that's when he would put it out and clean it out, and then relight it.
All the
Neiris are all on top of the menorah. However, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that the Neiris were removable. You could remove them from the menorah in order to clean them out. It's all part of the menorah. There's seven lamps on it, but they would do five, and then they would do some other avoda in between, as we said, either dama tamid or tortas. And then they continue with the other two. So the reason why it was a simon that the Shechinah rests among the Jewish people, that this nest would happen. It's called a Ner Maravi. There's a Machloikas. Rashi explains, there's a Machloikas in Menachos, which direction was the menorah placed? Was it placed with its long axis east to west? In other words, with some of the lamps are closer to the Kodesh HaKadosh and some are closer to the, and some are closer to the Kodesh. In that case, the Ner Maravi would be the second one from the, would be the second one from the east. You have, when you walk in, you would see, you have the lamps of the menorah like this. So you have the closest one to you, then you have the second one, that would be the Ner, that's called the Ner Maravi. It's called the Ner Maravi because it's the first one west of the other one.
The other one is close to the
Ulam. The other one is close to the Ulam, right. And then you have, according to the opinion, that the menorah was placed like this, north to south, then the Ner Maravi is the middle one. And then the point would be all the other ones are tilted a little bit so that the, so that the, so that the flames face towards the middle one, and the middle one was tilted so that the flame of it faced west towards the Kodesh HaKadosh.
So that makes it
straight on. So that would, so right. Okay. Fine. So during Shimon HaTzadik's time, that ness would happen, that it would stay lit longer. Mikan ve'elach, pomim derlich, pomim kava. Afterwards, sometimes it would last the whole night. Sometimes it would go out like all the other ones. V'haya, another ness that would happen in Shimon HaTzadik's time. V'haya, eish shel ma'arocha misgaber. The fire of the ma'arocha, of the wood pile on the mizbeach, was very powerful. The kohenim didn't even have to bring wood to feed the fire, except for the shnei gzira etzim, which they have the mitzvah to bring in the afternoon, which we learned previously in the second parak. There's a special mitzvah in the Torah to bring two logs of wood. Actually, Agos Habach asks, why is Rashi mentioning only the one in the evening and not the one in the morning? We know you have to bring shnei gzira etzim in the morning as well. So Marsha gives an answer, because in the morning you have, they set up the wood pile, and shortly after that they put on the two pieces of wood. So we're not mentioning that because no chiddush in it. In the afternoon, after the whole day when the wood's been burning, you would think they have to put on much more wood. No, the only thing they have to put on is the two pieces of wood, and only because Gzeres HaKosu that they have to put on the two pieces.
That would come to a different kohenim.
A different kohenim, yeah. You have one kohen in the morning, two kohen in the afternoon, right. Kedilakayim, mitzvahs eitzim, to mimakayim, the mitzvah that you have to put wood on the marach. After that, sometimes the fire would be strong, sometimes not. So the kohenim wouldn't have to hold back from bringing wood for the fire the whole day, because otherwise the fire is going to go out after Shimon HaTzadik's time. And also in Shimon HaTzadik's times, in Shimon HaTzadik's times, a bracha was sent in the Omer and the Shteh Lechem and the Lechem upon him, where even though that where every Kohen would get only a small amount and still it would fill them up. So every Kohen who received a Kazayas of it, yesh oichle v'seveya, some of them would eat and they would be full from it, even though you don't normally get full from a Kazayas, but yesh oichle v'moyser, and some would even be so full that they'd leave some over because they couldn't even eat the whole thing. So there was a bracha. After Shimon HaTzadik's times, there was a curse in the Omer and the Shteh Lechem and the Lechem upon him. So every Kohen, so Kohenim would receive only the size of a bean. Now there's different gersoris and different explanations. The way Rashi says it over here is that from Rashi's lashon, it seems that after that, some Kohenim got a kazayis and some got less, only the amount of a bean. Rabbeinu Eliyakim, among others, explains that no, what it means is that now you had, everyone is only getting a small amount, not even a kazayis, only a bean. No, because then it wouldn't be a curse. Because there was a curse, so therefore, like this, in other words, a bederach nes, it would multiply and there would be enough, even though there were a large number of kohenim. And now we have not. Now, because of that, hatsnuin, the kohenim who are more discreet, who don't want to grab things, moshchenes yadeim, they would hold their hands back. Because they figured like this. It's one thing if we get a kazayis. Then we're making the mitzvah of eating the lachem aponim or the oimer by eating a kazayis. In general, eating in Torah is defined as a kazayis. If we get a smaller amount, but it fills us up, okay, then at least it fills us up. We're also mekayim a mitzvah with that. But like this, we're only getting a bean. It's not going to fill us up anyway. So why bother? We're not going to be mekayim a mitzvah anyway. We may as well not bother grabbing for our portion. V'agaguronin, whereas the gluttonous ones, notlin v'oichlin, they would take, or the Gemara elsewhere says, they would grab v'oichlin and they would eat. by the way, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch in this connection that you have to be careful not to go and fight and grab over mitzvahs. It mentions over there, for example, you have, let's say, you're trying to decide who should daven by the Amud, or for example, in some kahilas where they have the minhag that only one person at a time says Kaddish, then you have to be careful not to fight over it, like we're saying over here. In fact, it once happened that one Kohen took the portion that was supposed to be for him as well as for somebody else. For the rest of his life, until he died, they called him Ben Chamtzon. The word Chamtzon means a gazlan. In fact, Rabbeinu Chananel has the expression over here, not Chamtzon with a tzaddik, but Chamtzon, the Loshon Chomos. So they called him that until the day he died. So Tosfos says, if everybody's grabbing for the lechem upon him, why did they single him out with a name? So Tosfos says a couple of reasons. Maybe what it is he grabbed from another grabber. You have, then usually the grabbers would grab from the tznuin. So okay, the tznuin are not taking anyway, so nobody minds that much if they're taking their portion. But this guy, one person had grabbed a piece of lechem upon him or whatever for himself, and then this guy went and grabbed it from him. Or maybe also Tosfos says what it is other people would grab, but then if other people grabbed from them, they wouldn't mind so much. Look, you know, fair is fair. You know, I grab. So if you end up grabbing from me, no big deal. This guy made a huge deal about if other people would grab from him, whereas he's grabbing from others. So therefore, they nicknamed him Ben Chamtzon. There is an interesting idea from Reuben Margolius on this. He says that now the word Chamtzon, the Gemara is going to say over here, means a grabber. But the word chamtzon is also related to the word chimtza, which means a bean. And on top, not chametz, but like hummus. Actually, the chickpeas in Arabic are called chimsa or chims hummus or whatever. And from that, you get hummus, the dip, because they're made from that. And actually, he says, there was also, we know there was a Kohen Gadol late in the time of the second Mishnah, named Rabbi Shmuel ben Piabi. And the word pavi, or piabi, whatever, is also similar to a Latin word for a bean, fava. So maybe what it is there was a multilingual pun over here. This guy maybe was from the family of Yishmael ben Pavi, where the Gemara says, even though Yishmael himself was a tzaddik, his family were rishoyim and grabbers and people who would steal and oppress the people. So they called him Ben Chamtzon as like a multilingual pun, the son of the bean. Ben Fava. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Shila, Maikra, where's a posik that expresses the idea that Chamtzon means somebody who steals? The posik says in Tillim, Elikai Paltenim Yad Rasha, David HaMelech asks, Hashem, save me from the hand of the Rasha, Mikaf Ma'avel V'Choymetz, from the hand of the one who acts unfairly, and the Choymetz. So we see that a Choymetz is somebody who steals. Rava Amar Mehacha, Rava says, I have a different posik. The Navi tells the Jewish people, "Limdu hetiv, learn to do good. Dirshu mishpat, look for opportunities to do mishpat, to do justice. Ashru chometz, strengthen the chometz, and that means chometz means the one who's been stolen from. It means ashru chometz, v'al ta'ashru chometz, strengthen the one who's been stolen from, not the one who's stealing." Which Rashi says that doesn't really belong over here in the Gemara. What it is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that from here we learn that if you have a that if you have two people come to a din Torah, actually it's in Bava Kamma really, that if two people are coming to a din Torah, we first listen to the argument of the nitba of the teveya. The Teveya, the one who's claiming this other person took or was keeping money from me unjustly, we listen to his claim first because he's the Chometz. Only then do we listen to the other guy who may be the Chometz. The Gemara gives an example over there. Let's say, so you have Reuben says, Shimon, you owe me money, pay up. And Shimon on the other hand says, yeah, but I gave you a mashkin and you lost it or something. So Reuben has the stronger claim because he's saying, I lent you money and you haven't paid it back. Therefore, we listen to his, therefore, Basedim listens to his argument first. That's Ashru Chometz and not Chometz. But Rashi says it doesn't really belong in our Gemara over here. The point is that the word Chometz means somebody who steals or somebody who grabs, and therefore they call this guy Ben Chamtzon. Getting back to Shimon HaTzadik, Tanan Rabbanan, Oysa Shana Shemesva Shimon HaTzadik, the year when Shimon HaTzadik passed away, Amar Lahem, he says, the Bishonazu who mess, this year he, meaning I, am going to pass away. Omrulim minayin after Yedeas, they asked him, how do you know? Omrulim, he says, b'chol yom kippurim, hoyim is damanly zokin echad, hoyim is damanly zokin echad. Every Yom Kippur, I would meet up with an old man, lovush levonim v'otif levonim, he was dressed in white and wrapped in white, which is a simon of simcha. Now, who is this old man? It can't, the Tosfos Yeshanim brings from the Yerushalmi, it can't have been a malach. No malach is even allowed, and the pasuk says, b'chol adam, l'yir b'oil moed, nobody is allowed to be in the heichel, when the Kohen Gadols and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Rishami says that means even the Malachim are not allowed to be in there. So the answer is it was actually a manifest, not even the Malachim are allowed. No, so it can't be no, he's also a Malach. So no, what it is it was a manifestation of Hashem himself. Kvod HaKodesh Baruch Hu, it was the covered of the Eibishter himself meeting up with Shimon HaTzadik. And every time he would come in with me into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then he would accompany me out. This time on Yom Kippur, I met up with the same old man, but this time he was dressed in black as a simon of mourning, but otif shchorim and wrapped up in black clothes, and he came in with me, and he did not come out with me. So therefore, I know that this year was going to be different.
When was he asked for redemption?
That he had, that's Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. That's in Brachas. The Gemara says that one time Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol says that I saw a Reisi Akasriel Ka Hashem Tzvakos through Yosef Akasir Ominisi. Yeah, it's a Gemara in Brachas. That was Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. That was much, much later. This is Shimon HaTzadik. Acha HaRegel, after Yom Tov, meaning after Sukkos, Chol HaShivo Yomim, Shimon HaTzadik was sick for 7 days, Umes, and then he passed away. And from then on, v'nimnu echav akoyinim levorech b'shem. From then on, his fellow koyinim stopped saying birkas koyinim using the shem amfodesh, because they felt they're not worthy of it anymore. There's a much lower level of the shkina in the Bais Mikdash. As we said, the various nisim that happened in Shimon HaTzadik's time stopped. So up until that time, they used the shem amfodesh in duchening. From now on, this in the Bais Mikdash. From now on, they stopped doing it. What's the shem amfodesh? We talked about in the previous parak, various opinions of Rishonim. Is it the name Yudke Vavke, the way it's supposed to be pronounced? Is it the shem of 12 letters? Is it the shem of 42 letters? Etc.
Also,
so on Yom Kippur, no. So on Yom Kippur, at least the Rambam writes that for long after that, the Kohen Gadol would still use the Shem HaMefodesh on Yom Kippur all of the times when he said Hashem's name. But he would say it, but the Gemara mentions later on that they would sort of drown it out in the singing of the Kohenim so that people who are not Roy shouldn't hear it, right? For the last 40 years before the Bais Mikdash was destroyed, the second Bais Mikdash, the girdle of Hashem never came up in the right hand of the Kohen Gadol. So up until that point, in other words, Shimon HaTzadik was at the beginning of the second Bais Mikdash. So you have, after he passed away, it didn't always come up in the right hand. So sometimes it would, sometimes it wouldn't. These last 40 years, it never did. And the loy haya loshen shall zahoris malbin, the red strip never turned white. The loy haya ner ma'arabi doylek, the ner ma'arabi never lasted longer than the other ones. V'hayu dalsas ha'hechel nefetochas me'alehen, and the doors of the hechel would open on their own, as if like to say that the goyim can enter. Because we know the goyim wouldn't have been able to destroy the Bais Mikdash if Hashem didn't make it possible. So therefore, like the doors were opening up as if to symbolize it's ready for you to come in. Adshagor behen Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai. And so Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai yelled at the doors to stop it. He says, Heichel, Heichel, mipnei ma atam mavis atzmacha. Why are you frightening yourself? You're frightening yourself, frightening the whole Jewish people. It's true. I know that eventually you're going to be destroyed. In fact, the Navi Zechariah at the beginning of the second Bais Mikdash already said a nevuah about that. The pasuk says, "Psach levonin de losecha, levonin, open up your doors, the seichal esh ba'arazecha, and fire will consume your cedars." Now, in the Poshtav Pshat of the Pasuk, Levonin means the forest in the north of Eretz Yisrael, the country of Lebanon nowadays. But Marashah points out, a forest doesn't have doors, so what's the expression, Psach Levonin de Losecha? So therefore, it has to refer to the Bais Mikdash. The Bais Mikdash is called Levonin, as the Gemara is going to say. So Omer Rabbi Yitzchak ben Tavloi, Loma Nikos Shmoy Levonin, why is the Bais Mikdash called Levonin? Shemalbin, Avanei Sein, Shal Yisrael, because it whitens and cleans up the Averis of the Jewish people. So therefore, so the Navi is saying in Nebuah that eventually the doors are going to open and fire is going to come in and consume the Bais Mikdash. So Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai tells the doors, though, stop it. You don't have to keep on worrying us by doing it on your own. Josephus, in his histories, by the way, records something very similar. He says that there, he describes with a little more detail. He says there were gates of the Besmikdash that it took, usually it would take 20 people to open these gates on their own because they're so big and heavy, and here they would just swing open on their own. So he didn't know what the reason was behind it, but our Gemara tells us what it was. Armor of Zutra Batrub, Yalaman Nikoshma Yar, also, why is the Besmikdash called a forest? Shanema Dichtib Base Yar Halavonin. You have. Now in Poshet Pshat, the Pasuk is describing Base Yar Halavonin was one of Shlomo's palaces. It was his summer palace, and it's called Base Yar Halavonin because it had a huge number of wooden columns in it, so it looked like a forest. But the Gemara is darshining that Base Yar Halavonin actually refers to the Besmikdash, so why is it being called a forest? Loimaloch, my Yar Malavle, it teaches you that just like a forest produces leaves and fruit, Af Besmikdash Malavle, the same way the Besmikdash produces leaves and fruit. The Amr of Hoshia, Beshar Shabana Shlomo Besmikdash, when Shlomo built the Besmikdash, not about Komine Megodim Shalzahav, he planted in it all kinds of delicious fruit trees made out of gold. Now, it couldn't have been actual trees. You're not allowed to plant trees in Besmikdash, but these were trees made out of gold. Of different kinds. So he'd make like date palms of gold and apple trees of gold and orange trees of gold and so forth. Well, you might see in Paris, Bismanehen, the trees produced fruit in their appropriate season. So in the season when date palms are producing fruit, then these golden ones would also produce fruit. In the season when apple trees are producing fruit, then these ones would also produce fruit. As a nest, of course. The kivin shall ruach min hasheves behen, when the wind would blow on these fruits, hayu noshin perisei, and then the fruits would fall off the trees. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, yirash kalavon in piriyei, in capital Ayin Beis, which is a tefillah for the welfare of the Jewish people and for the welfare of Shlomo HaMelech, it says that their fruit should bang around like the fruit of Levonin. So again, we're saying Levonin is the Besmikdash. So in other words, the Jewish people should produce as much fruit as the Besmikdash did. The point is, Marashah says, now regular fruit, it doesn't have to fall off the tree. You know when it's ripe, you pick it. Here it's golden fruit. You're not going to know when it's ripe. Therefore, they have to wait till it falls off the tree to know that then it's ready to be picked. Nobody bit into it. What it is umehen ha'isa parnosa l'kohona. The kohenim could make extra money selling them. They would take these fruits and sell them to earn extra money.
They grew in the
Besmikdash. So actually, okay, so the Ursa Meach talks about in one of his Sforim how there's not a problem in the Ela with it. But whatever the case, the point is it was an extra income for the Kohenim. People would buy them. I mean, people could display it in their houses. People could melt down the gold and use it for something else, whatever.
It wasn't
that they could eat it. No, of course not. The kivin shenichnesu over kechavim lahechel, when the Goyim came into the Hechel, yavshu, then those trees dried up. Now elsewhere, there are other places where Chazal say that rather what it was is when Menashe brought Avodah Zarah into the Hechel is when they dried up. So Yifei Enayim, in the back of our Gemara, says that maybe that's what the Gemara means over here. Maybe it's not Shenichnesu Avodah Kachavim, but rather it's supposed to be Shenichnesu Avodah Zarah, or Avodah Kachavim, whatever. When they brought Avodah Zarah into the Hechel, then those trees dried up. Shenema, as we find a pasuk that describes this, Uferach Levonin Umlo, the flowers of the Levonin have been are cut off. Again, Levonin, meaning the Beis Mikdash, so therefore it shows that the flowers and trees in the Beis Mikdash at some point dried up. The Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lachziro Lanu, but in the future Hashem will return that to us in the third Beis Mikdash. Shenema, as you have a Nevuah of Yeshaya about the Geula Hasidah, Paroyach Tifrach V'Sogil, It will flower forth and it will be happy. Af Gilas Svedan, it will be happy and joyous. Kvoid Alavonin Nitanlo, it will be given the glory of the Levonin. So the same glory that the Levonin, that the Besmikdash had in the past, it will have again in the future with these golden trees. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Nosnan of Shnei Asirim, we said he put the two gerolas on the two goats, and he said Lashem Chata, so we said according to Rabbi Shmuel, he said only Lashem. So Tanarabonan, Esapom and Masu Kohen Gadol Hashem Boi Bayoyim. The Kohen Gadol would mention Hashem's name, and that means again the Shema Mefardesh 10 times on that day of Yom Kippur. Gimel Bavidui Rishon 3 times during the first Vidui, because he says Ona Hashem. So that's 3 times in the first vidui, and 3 in the second vidui, which he does for the Kohenim, 3 on the Sur Lazazel, which is a vidui for the whole Jewish people, the Echad, the Gerolus, and then 1 time when he says Lashem Chathos, when he does the Gerol. Ukvar Omer Hashem, and it already happened that he said Hashem the Nishma Kole BiYericho, his voice could be heard as far away as Yericho.
We learned this in Shkolim.
Yeah, we learned this in the Yerushalmi has it there in Shkolim. The Babli has it here in Yoma. Yeah. So Omer Rabbi Baba Chana, Yerushalayim LiYericho Asara Parsa, is from Yerushalayim to Yericho is 10 parsa. A parsa is about 2.5 miles, so you're talking 25 miles away. They could hear the sound, they could hear the Kohen Gadol's voice. Now, does that mean in every other direction? So actually, there are Mefoshim who say that no, it means Davka in the direction of Yericho. And there's a few reasons why. First of all, you had Tzidkiyahu's tunnel that went from Yerushalayim to Yericho, so maybe the sound traveled through the tunnel, whereas in other directions they didn't have that. Maybe also the topography from Yerushalayim to Yericho is downhill and it's fairly flat, so therefore the sound could travel, not necessarily so much in other directions where there are mountains around Yerushalayim. And another interesting point, the Ravid makes an interesting point in his Pirush on Tamid. Yericho is special compared to the rest of Eretz Yisrael. It was the first city conquered in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, I mentioned this last time. It was the first city that the Yeshua and the Jewish people conquered in Eretz Yisrael, and they declared it Cherem. It was Kodesh for Hashem, and it was never to be rebuilt until later on Chiyah rebuilt it. So therefore, it had a special degree of Kedusha. It's like almost like a mini Yerushalayim. So therefore, things that take place in Yerushalayim are going to be heard in Yericho and felt in Yericho more than any place else.
Isn't one of the cities from the Masechet Megillah that was destroyed, and then one of the kings came and... Like,
so yes, so what it is it was destroyed by Yeshua and the Jewish army. Then he said nobody should ever rebuild it. Later on, there was a fellow named Chiel who came and rebuilt it in Ahab's times, and he was punished for that.
Yeah, and they would, like, throw it in, and they, renew some details, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't know if it mentions it in Megillah, but could be, yeah. Anyway, so Marsha says a vote on it. Since we're saying the Kohen Gadol would say Hashem's name 10 times, the 10 times correspond to the 10 spheres, says Marsha. And every time he would raise his voice louder. So therefore, by the 10th time, he's saying it so loud that you could hear it all the way as far as Yericho, 10 parasa away. The sound of the noise of the hinges of the Heichel door opening could be heard 8 Tchumei Shabbos away from Yerushalayim. A Tchumei Shabbos is 2,000 Amos, is about a little over half a mile. So 8 Tchumei Shabbos, you're talking about 5 miles. You could hear it 5 miles away. Now, so Tosfos says, one second, doesn't it say in the Mishnah in Tamid that they could hear the sound from Yericho? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. You could hear the actual noise of the hinge, the noise of the squeaking of the hinges. You could hear, like our Gemara is saying, only 5 miles away. But the sound of the doors themselves opening, they could hear in Yericho. The doors themselves, in other words, made a noise besides for the hinges.
How many would you say this is Tchumei Shabbos?
I mean, hinges, it's 8 Tchumei Shabbos, about 5 miles.
The Amma, we say like this.
An Amma is about 1.5 feet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so multiplied by 2,000 comes to about 3,000 feet, which is a little over half a mile, yeah. Also, Tosfos says another possibility is that within 8 Tchumei Shabbos, you could actually tell that this is the noise of hinges. After that, you heard a sound, but you couldn't necessarily distinguish that it was the sound of the hinges. If you didn't know it was, then you wouldn't realize it. On the other hand, Tosfos Yeshonim says that our Gemara disagrees with that Mishnah and Tamid. The Mishnah and Tamid says you could hear it all the way in Yericho, and our Gemara is bringing a Braise said that no, you could only hear it 8 Tchumei Shabbos away. Okay. Also, Izim Shib Yericho Hevis Achit Mereach HaPtoris. The goats in Yericho would sneeze from the aroma of the Torus that was so strong that it would get into their nostrils and make them sneeze. The women in Yericho would not need to wear perfume because of the smell of the Torah. So we said that Beis Avtinas would make a deal when they married women from other families. They would tell them, you're not allowed to wear perfume because we don't want people to think that we're taking perfume from the Kurdis. So we're saying, if they're in Yerushalayim or Yericho, they didn't need to wear perfume anyway. But if they were in other places, they would. But the deal was that they're not supposed to. Kala should Yerushalayim and it's Yerushalayim Skashet Menech Kurdis. And a Kala in Yerushalayim would not have to put on perfume because of the smell of the Kurdis. The idea, in other words, is that a kala wears much more perfume and much more fragrance than a regular woman. So in Yerushalayim, in Yericho, a regular woman wouldn't have to wear perfume, but a kala would. But in Yerushalayim, even a kala wouldn't need perfume because the smell of the ketores was so strong in Yerushalayim itself. Tosfos actually mentions that you're not allowed to have hana from the so at least there's actually a machlokas we learned about in Pesachim, a machlokas whether you're allowed to have hana from something like that. Loy efshav loy kamachaven. Abaya says it's also so. According to Abaya, how do they do it? Aren't they being over on an Easter? So Tosfos says. So according to Tosfos says, it's also to come closer in order to smell it better. But if you're going about your business in the city and the smell is coming to you, then even Abaya would agree there's not a problem, right? Okay. Also, Omer Rav Yosi ben Dugoi, or Elazar ben Eliezer ben Diglai, it says on the side, Izim hoyul abba bahore michvar, or michvar, it's really supposed to be, my father had goats in the mountains of Michvar, which is in Avra Yarden, on the other side of the Dead Sea, on the other side of the Yarden, from Yerushalayim, Roim Esachis, Merei HaKtoris, and even there, the goats would sneeze because of the smell of the Ktoris, because the smell went that far. And similarly, also, Amr of Chiba Oven, to give you an idea how powerful the smell of the Torah is, Amr of Chiba Oven, Amr of Shimon Korcha, Sochli Zokan Echad, an old person once told me, Pam Achas Holachti L'Shiloi, one time I went to Shiloi, we were 1,000 years earlier, the Mishkan had been in Shiloi, Beherachti Reach Torah Meben Kosleha. I smelled the smell of the Torah from the wall, that the smell had penetrated the walls over the years, and I guess in the times of this Zokan, the walls were still standing. Nowadays, you go over there, I've been there, you have a piece of flat ground over there, which they think is the place where the Mishkan was, but they haven't found any remnants of it or anything, as far as I know. But they apparently, in this time, in the time of this Zokan Echad, the walls of Shiloh were still standing. The Gemara tells us in Zvachim that the Mishkan Shiloh, it had walls made out of stone, and then they covered it with the curtains of the Mishkan. So it was like half house, half Mishkan. So apparently, in the time of the Zokan Echad, the walls were still standing. And they'd absorbed over the years such a fragrance of Curtis that he could still smell it now 1,000 years later. Bechlal, we have in Ruchnius, when there's Kedusha in a place, then the Kedusha stays there even long after it stops being used for that purpose of Kedusha, you can still tell it. They tell a story, for example, about some Rebbe who was passing by in the city of Kalish. He passed by a certain place and he smelled a certain tremendous fragrance and like he couldn't move from the spot. And it turned out afterward that 200 years earlier, the Magen Avraham had lived there. So therefore, he still smelled the smell of the Kedusha of the Tzaddik 200 years later.
Am I going to mention something?
Like, no, just the Magen Avraham was a great Tzaddik and a great Talmid Chacham. So now, 200 years later, this Rebbe was passing by over there, smelled this aroma, this fragrance from the Tzaddik having been there.
The famous story of the Rebbe, he was hiding his soul. And
the Belzer, I think, or somebody came in and, yeah, for me, you can't hide, right? That's also true, yeah. Yeah.
But do they know his melody?
What?
Today,
I don't know if anybody knows. Yeah. All right. Shkoyach, everyone.